Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive number one, number two employee. Leave a message at the...
Hi, Jamie. It's you, Jamie. Don't be alarmed, but I think there's a guy following you. Maybe we should get that guard dog we talked about? Nothing too scary. Maybe like a Bichon with an attitude? You know, Progressive's collision insurance covers injured dogs and cats at no extra cost, so... Wait, the guy stood up when I stood up. He's on the phone. He's looking right at me. Oh, wait, it's just my reflection. Don't tell anyone about this.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Pet coverage not available in New Hampshire and North Carolina.
Hi, you've reached the High Fashion Hotline.
Hi, I make sure my family's always stylish, and all I want in return are those three little words.
Thank you, Mom.
Nope.
All on sale?
Yes.
Go to Old Navy.
Old Navy?
Yep, get 30% off your entire purchase at Old Navy's thank you event.
30% off everything? Even jeans, sweaters, and jackets?
30% off all of it. And Old Navy card members get 40% off at Old Navy and OldNavy.com.
I heard that.
High Fashion. Old Navy. Valid 10/11 to 10/15. Excludes in-store clearance, gift cards, register lane items, jewelry, today only, and two-day only deals. 40% off are subject to credit approval. See stores for details and exclusions.
Hello, hello, I'm Matt Williamson. This is a Locked On NFL podcast, as we've been doing every Wednesday, one of our most popular shows of the week. I have Mike Renner on from Pro Football Focus. Mike, how is it going?
It's going pretty good, Matt.
Good, good, good. Let's dig right into it. I know that you've done a lot of work on Jacksonville's D, and everyone's aware that listens that I'm also highly involved with Steelers Nation Radio, so I focused on that game. And I watched a lot of Jacksonville leading up to the game. And I think it's in contention to be the best defense in the league. And I want to get a lot deeper with you on that. But give me your initial impressions.
Yeah, I think they are right up there right now. I'd put them in Denver 1A, 1B. Simply because when you have a pass rush like they do, and when you can cover on the back end like both those teams can, I don't really care what your run defense is. You're going to be tough to score on. That's just, and both those teams... Both those teams are probably top five in both those regards.
Yeah, and obviously you'd rather be great against the pass than the run in today's NFL. Which leads me to this. You know, going into that game, I was asked a million times, so how should the Steelers attack the Jags defense? And people would say, well, I see they're really high ranked against the pass, but they're not against the run. And I said, yes, I do think that the run game should be the foundation of the Steelers' attack. And it shocks me that they didn't give Bell more carries. But I also said, watching them on tape, don't think that they're one of the worst run defenses out there. I mean, they can get to the ball. They penetrate. They allowed some fluky big runs against the Jets that probably skewed their numbers. But I don't think it's a bad run defense.
No, I don't think it's a bad run defense at all. I know they're ranked, I think, 31st in terms of yards against. But they're 13th in our grading, which tells me they have the guys to get it done. They're just an incredibly aggressive defense that they're basically sell out their defensive ends. They sell out with stunts and stuff to attack the pass. They don't really care about run defense. And that gets back to what we talked about earlier. You don't really need a great run defense to be a great defense in the NFL today. You need a pass rush. You need coverage on the back end. And that's what they focus on with that Jags defense.
Yeah. And let's talk about them schematically. I mean, obviously they've put a ton of resources, free agency, draft picks into the defensive side of the ball, and it's paying off. They've built themselves in a Seahawk-like manner, you know, in terms of one, a heavier, strong safety in the box type, a free safety that can roam in the middle of the field, active linebackers, big corners. They play a lot of zone, but they can also go man. They don't blitz a lot. Does that sound pretty accurate to you?
Yeah, that's all very accurate. It's actually interesting. They didn't change much from last year in terms of schematically. They're still running the Seattle cover three that Gus Bradley brought over. They're still, I believe, in the top three in terms of running cover three, in terms of how much they run it. Over 50% of their snaps are in that defense. So it's really a lot of the same rates that we saw a season ago. They just have Calais Campbell now and A.J. Boye now, and all of a sudden that just takes your defense from a good one a season ago to a great one that they are now.
Yeah, well said. And there's some defenses out there, and Seattle's a great example, that don't have to get cute. You know, that the example I always use is the 3 years that I was a recruiting assistant at Pitt, we were in the Big East, and that's when the U was the U. And they could put it up on the scoreboard, we're going to run a 4-3 stack every play. And, you know what's coming, best of luck defeating it, but they had Will Fork and Vilma and Rumpf and Sean Taylor, and first-round picks all over the place that they just out-executed you.
Yeah, if you have, it's very much like Seattle. When you have the talent advantage, you don't have to beat people with scheme. You can run the same scheme and ask them to beat you with their talent. You know, say I will match up my best player with your best player, and I think mine's going to win. And I think that's what they do. The one interesting schematic wrinkle I'll say that they have done more this year is they do stunt more than any team in the NFL in terms of along their defensive line. A lot of that's because they only bring four plays, like you said. They don't blitz much. And a lot of it is also because they had Calais Campbell, who I think is probably the best stunt weapon in the NFL, the way he can attack a gap at, you know, 6'8", 6'9", and gain control of offensive linemen. So they've had a lot of success using that as well.
Yeah, that's an excellent point. And, you know, just thinking about that, I didn't know that they were number one in stunt percentage. But they also don't have a Will Fork or a Harrison type that wouldn't excel
yes,
in that role.
Yeah, there's,
you know?
There's not any – they don't have slow a true guys. Nose tackle really in there.
Let's go back to front. Campbell's been awesome. Malik Jackson, I think, is even worth the money going 2 years now. I mean, and that's saying a lot because he's making a ton. Fowler has stepped up, and I think Ndakwe could be a star.
Yeah, Ndakwe is a – is probably a pass rush only type of guy. He's a bit of the reason why their run defense is a little bit of a liability in that regard, but he has some juice off the edge. Their defensive ends have probably taken the biggest step forward of anyone on that team in terms of performance from last year to this year.
Fowler in particular.
Yeah. Those guys were not game changers. They were not impact sort of defensive ends last year. Now they're sort of guys who can take advantage of a really bad tackle. And then all of a sudden, if they're taking advantage of bad tackles on the outside, you know Campbell and Jackson are going to win on the inside, so it's just created a lot of issues for opposing offensive lines.
On the second level, I don't feel like Posluszny's being phased out as much as Jack is stepping up, because it used to be Posluszny was an every-down backer, but now they just can't keep Jack off the field. Telvin Smith's the best player that most people don't know about and just covers tons of ground.
Yeah, it just makes sense to... with the defense they're running, if you are going to be, you know, in a nickel defense, you want Miles Jack out there. It goes back to what we were saying. Posluszny's he's good in run defense. He can do that. He's not Miles Jack in terms of what he can do in coverage. Miles Jack's just a freak athlete in terms of, you know, just for the linebacker position. People were talking about him playing safety when he came out, and he looks like it at times in that scheme. So I do think that they're making the right call here, giving Jack the majority of the snaps.
Yeah, I do too. And especially for the future, and it's a lot of speed on the field in that front seven when in their nickel package. And their secondary might even be the strength of the team. I mean, a guy like Colvin's a good slot corner. You mentioned Bouye. He's worth the money, which is a big praise. If I had to pick one defensive back right now to start my team with, it would clearly be Jalen Ramsey. And then, and then their safeties kind of clone Thomas and Chancellor. You know, Church is more in the box, Gibson's more the free. Really good secondary, huh?
It is very good, and I like Gibson in terms of I think he's a good playmaker. You worry about him in terms of he likes to make too many plays. That's where he gets into trouble, is getting out of that deep middle position. But I think when you have him protected with two corners like they do have, then all of a sudden his playmaking ability can take over. And so all of a sudden that defensive, you know, that secondary looks, I might put it as the best in the league right now over the Denver Broncos. It's tough to throw against in the back end there.
Yeah. It's funny because, you know, we talked about the Seattle comparison and their free safety masks the problems in front of them. You know, the other 10, especially the corners, allows them to be more aggressive. Where in this scheme, it's a little bit of the opposite because the corners are so good.
Yeah, it's sort of a – when you play the cover three, there's those three deep zones, and it's – if one guy can sort of make up more ground, you know, play a half of a field instead of a third of the field, all of a sudden that makes everyone else's job easier. And they got two corners that, you know, can take maybe not a half of the field, but two-fifths themselves. So then you give one-fifth to Gibson, and then he can make plays in that role.
I mean, I know he's only played like 20 career games, but Jalen Ramsey looks like the Hall of Famer to me.
I'm not going to argue with there. I came into the season saying I thought he would win our award for best coverage player this season. He is making me look like a genius so far. But yeah, he's been outstanding. I think his just all the stats so far have been lights out.
Just one more Steelers note. I assume you watched the game intently and, you know, judging things off of that. I've been saying all along that Roethlisberger has struggled all year. And I don't know if you've watched every snap of him or not, but I felt like he played in his other four games, except he was a little more unlucky, and he played against a faster, more athletic defense that got their hands on the ball that, you know, I don't know that he was light years worse than he was in week one, two, three, or four.
No, I didn't think so either. It's just his issues have come throwing the ball down the field. He's been awful, just legitimately awful on deep passes. And that was...
And they throw deep a lot.
That was his bread and butter. You know, that, yeah, exactly. That is him. Ben Roethlisberger is the gunslinger down the field who can put it into, you know, drop it in a bucket 50 yards away. He has not done that at all. I think he's dead last in the NFL right now in terms of deep passing, adjusted completion percentage for us. I think he's under like 25% on deep balls, which with Martavis Bryant and Antonio Brown, that doesn't even seem possible.
No, right. I mean, and I don't know. It's mind-boggling. I mean, I'm not saying he's done or anything like that, but, you know, when your legs start to go...
Say he's done, man. Go there.
Well, you should see the buzz I'm getting in Pittsburgh, because I've been kind of the first one on the bandwagon saying, guys, it's time to worry about Ben. And now he throws five picks, and everyone thinks I'm a genius. And I'm like, guys, I didn't say he was done. I'm just saying it's throwing it out there.
It's that 04 QB class, man. They all hit the wall all at once, it seems like.
Yeah, and just because Brady plays because he's a million years old doesn't mean that everyone should.
That's kind of gets swept under the rug with how Peyton almost played till he was 40. Brett Favre in his 40s. Tom Brady.
Breeze.
Traditionally, quarterbacks didn't make it that far, you know, didn't make it to 40. That's why these guys are shattering all these records, is because guys just didn't play that long in careers. It's almost like a pitcher in baseball. Sometimes you just lose it in your mid-30s, and it's no real reason why. You just do.
Yeah, and Ben hasn't over the last few years, but he has really taken a beating in his career from extending plays and choosing to get hit and all those type of things. Battled a lot of lower body injuries. His lower half's what worries me. And Rivers, he stands in the pocket forever and takes a hit in the chin, you know, throwing deep downfield for the majority of his career. And people overlook Eli. The guy never misses a game.
Yeah, they've all really taken, you know, played through injuries, played, and they're all sort of statuesque quarterbacks who weren't mobile to begin with. Mm-hmm. And it sort of just builds up over time. It's tough to maintain that body into your mid-30s. And they don't strike me as guys who are fitness freaks, so to speak, who are going to be maintaining their body all offseason incredibly well. So I think it's starting to – age is definitely starting to catch up with all the guys.
Yes. And last thing on that note, if one of those three is to have a really strong second half of the season, I'm still putting a chip on Ben.
Yeah, he has the most going on around him in terms of it won't take much for him to flip that switch back. Whereas Philip Rivers, Eli Manning, they'll have to carry, you know, subpar talent on some parts of their offense.
Yeah, New York's going to be nasty.
Man. Oh, that was one of the most unbelievable things. Their top three wide receivers in one game. They're done. So done.
You've reached the High Fashion Hotline.
Hi, I make sure my family's always stylish, and all I want in return are those three little words.
Thank you, Mom.
Nope.
All on sale?
Yes.
Go to Old Navy.
Old Navy?
Yep, get 30% off your entire purchase at Old Navy's thank you event.
30% off everything? Even jeans, sweaters, and jackets?
30% off all of it. And Old Navy card members get 40% off at Old Navy and oldnavy.com.
Oh, I heard that.
High Fashion. Old Navy. Valid 10/11 to 10/15. Excludes in-store clearance, gift cards, register lane items, jewelry today only, and two-day only deals. 40% off are subject to credit approval. See stores for details and exclusions.
Who isn't done, and everyone is abuzz about, is Deshaun Watson. I get it. The fantasy community has to be going bonkers for this guy the last 2 weeks. The highlight community and seeing guys on NFL Network and SportsCenter and making big plays. I have some reservations about him, and I didn't love him coming out of school. I like the other three better in this class. I know you've been doing some Houston offense homework. Give me your thoughts overall.
I am quietly optimistic. So as a passer, there's still a long way to go. I'll say that. He's still very much underdeveloped. It's still a lot of easy stuff. It's still, and they've dumbed it, you know, they've, to their credit, they've made it very friendly offense to him. They're not asking him to do a lot. So in that regard, he's executing what they're asking fairly well. And there is a way to go, but still holds on to the ball a good amount of time in the pocket. Is still going to try to make plays with his legs, which you love. But, yeah, there's some downfield passing, and the arm strength issues do show up on certain passes. But the way Bill O'Brien has catered that offense to him, I give him a ton of credit. They had some runs this past week against KC where they weren't even blocked well. It was just the schematic aspect of it, the triple option stuff that they've done, some of the other option stuff, KC just wasn't ready for, and all of a sudden you get a 12-yard run where wasn't any really good block. The defense just wasn't in position to guard. So they can do running stuff in the run game with Deshaun Watson and have been, that is just going to give teams fits, and I give them all the credit for that. It's been probably the biggest difference between that Bengals game and all the subsequent games where the offense looks a lot better.
I 100% agree with everything you said. However, we've seen guys like RG3 and Kaepernick come into the league and get by or excel with non-traditional quarterback scheming, you know, like this is going on in Houston. And if you can't adjust and deliver a strike on 3rd and 8 consistently, you're not going to succeed in this league. And I'm still not in on board that Watson's going to be that guy.
No, I mean, I'm not either 100% saying he looks, you know, he's franchise quarterback through and through, but I will say he's already transformed that offense in terms of what they had in Tom Savage compared to him. It's night and day. So just from that aspect, it's a big improvement. If only that defense held its own, but that's a different conversation altogether.
Talking about injuries, you know, that's going to be a problem too. A couple other things I wanted to talk about that don't seem to be talked about enough is I still look at the Houston offensive line and say, it might be the worst in the league. I mean, it's terrible. And Watson holds the ball a very long time. In this instance, I don't know that's a bad thing because he's under pressure and he's running around like Russell Wilson. I wonder if he did have a better line, could he be a little more Dak-like? You know, I just don't know. I also think that Fuller coming back has helped them a lot. They really needed a second target. But I think Hopkins might be having the best season of his career, too. I've never been a huge fan, but, man, he's playing well.
Hopkins, he's sort of – I go back and forth on him because he's not a guy who separates
a lot. That's exactly what I say all the time.
And that hurts to – depending on the quarterback that you have throwing to him, he can disappear. You know, he can be completely ineffective, or he can go off the year like he did when he had Brian Hoyer throwing to him. So he's very good at the catch point. He's very good as incredible body control. But, yeah, I go back to he just doesn't separate incredibly well. So if you don't have a quarterback who trusts him, but that's the biggest thing about Deshaun Watson. One of his biggest strengths that I like coming out was he would throw to Mike Williams. He would throw to his wide receivers at Clemson when they weren't necessarily wide open. Mike Williams, another guy who didn't separate tremendously well. He would give him a chance, though, and put a ball in a place where only he would be able to get it. And he's been doing that well to Hopkins here in the NFL. So that is encouraging. I think it's a good sign for Hopkins, you know, prospects going forward.
Yeah, I 100% agree on that too, that Hopkins kind of made his name. There was like an 8 or 9 game stretch, I think 2 years ago, where he was targeted a historical amount of times.
You know, yeah, like, I think we had him at like 180 targets for the season.
Wow.
So like 12 a game.
And of course he put up big numbers, but I never looked at him and said, that's a number one wide receiver. But I do think him and Watson are a good pairing.
Yeah, and then I also liked your point of when Will Fuller gets back, that takes just the speed threat of that with how much play action they've been running. Mm-hmm. That just it draws defense's eyes. You know, you see play action, all of a sudden your eyes as a safety go to Will Fuller because he's going to be screaming at you, you know, 100 miles an hour. So I think that that's been a big help to the offense as well.
No doubt, and that's why Fuller was a first-round pick and why he was brought in. They were a slow group of pass catchers back then, and that was before Watson, obviously. But, you know, they really needed some sort of team speed.
Mm-hmm. And he's got it.
That's what he does, yeah.
Yeah.
Last subject. You've been doing some work on the Bills' defense, and my early takes are Tre'Davious White's really impressive. I think they're super well-coached. We talked how the Jags have mimicked Seattle. I think they've obviously mimicked Carolina, a lot of zone, a lot of 4-3 stack, only rush 4. Do you think it's sustainable, though? I just don't think there's a lot of talent on that side of the ball.
Sustainable in terms of, well, I don't think they play at this level. They're playing, I think, they're, what, number one scoring defense right now. I don't think that's sustainable. I think they take a little bit of a step back. But this is a team that was probably a bottom 10 defense a season ago. A lot of the same talent returning, and now you're a top 10 defense, and pretty comfortably a top 10 defense, I'd say, even as the season goes on. A lot of that's been helped by Tre'Davious White playing out of his mind as a rookie. I know he got burnt last week by A.J. Green, but he's made a ton. I think he leads the NFL in pass breakups at the moment.
And there's no shame in your fifth NFL game to have A.J. Green get the better.
Oh, yeah. And it's he didn't look ready for it whatsoever. It wasn't that he got burnt one-on-one. He kind of just didn't ever think A.J. Green was going to run. For some reason, just didn't think he was going to run a straight go route. He was squatting the whole way on some sort of hitch, some sort of out, and he got, just toasted. It was ugly. But it was more of a rookie mistake than anything I'd blame on him talent-wise. What he's done talent-wise has been, he's looked like a guy who's going to be a star in this league for a while. The one thing I do want to give Sean McDermott credit for, though, that you mentioned that you don't think there's a lot of talent in that back end. I think his eye for safeties and the way he plays the safeties is fantastic. We saw what he did with Kurt Coleman and Roman Harper in Carolina, turned them into quality starters again for them.
I think Harper should be in the league at that point.
Yeah, exactly. Harper was a complete liability in New Orleans, and all of a sudden he's a safety on one of the best defenses in the NFL and playing well. What he's done with Micah Hyde and Jordan Poyer has been pretty much the exact same thing, nothing short of a miracle. Those guys showed playmaking ability at their last spots, Hyde in Green Bay, Poyer in Cleveland. They're a kind of hybrid slot corner safety sort of guys with some coverage skills, some ball skills, and now they, what do they have, like six picks between them and like 8 pass breakups? They've been perfect fits for what they're asking them to do there.
I think Jerry Hughes is an underrated player who's consistently been good for a while. Is there anyone else in the front seven that the average fan doesn't know about that's really playing well in the new scheme?
I think it's just been a talented front seven that wasn't really utilized correctly, I'll say, under Rex Ryan. They were a nightmare in that 3-4 in terms of their gap control and the run defense. And just Rex ran so many like odd stunts and stuff with them that where guys weren't actually attacking. Guys were sort of moving one way to free up the blitzer. And if that blitzer got picked up, all of a sudden no one was getting pressure. Now they're letting them go one-on-one, the guys like Kyle Williams, guys like Marcel Darius, who can actually rush the passer on the interior. They're getting free runs and the ability to show that. And so I think that's been the biggest difference, just letting that talent, like we mentioned with the Jaguars, letting the talent work for itself instead of trying to out-scheme everybody.
Yeah, I mean, they're an execution-based offense that isn't going to throw a ton at you, but what they do well. I guess my last question, I don't know if you have these notes handy. Are they amongst the leaders in zone coverage?
Yes, I believe they're like 75% zone, 25% man, which is that's very high. That's
and Carolina always is as well, right?
Yeah, Carolina last year was crazy. McDermott's last year in Carolina, they ran 90% zone, which was like unheard. We've never seen anyone close to that. And I think second most was Pittsburgh at 80%. So they were just far and away. They played a little more man this year. I just don't think they trusted those corners as much last year in man. But I think Buffalo, like I said, is like 75% zone, 25% man. So
okay. One more note. I don't want to keep you too long, but clearly, I was always impressed with Carolina that I really like how they build their team. They know where they cut corners at corner. They cut corners at safety, and they find these diamonds in the rough at safety. They put a lot of assets into their front seven. So where I'm going with this was, it was shocking to me, and it's worked out great, and I know they lost Gilmore and then they traded Darby, that they actually did use a first-round pick on a corner. But I also think some of it was because of this, that when they were on the clock, 3 receivers were off the board, and it was like, we can't take any other wideout, even though I thought it was a giant need. So they trade back with and think, well, there isn't a wideout here. Let's just take a high-quality prospect in White, even though it's not exactly how we team build.
Yeah, I, I, I'm not exactly sure McDermott's 100% on board with that same team building strategy, but I do think they needed a more zone corner than Ronald Darby. The Ronald Darby move made a ton of sense. He was not going to fit well in that defense.
He's a Rex Ryan guy.
Yes, he's 100% a Rex Ryan guy. They just needed a corner. I think the playmaking ability of White was easily translatable to that defense. So I'm not sure they exactly were, you know, thinking we don't want to draft corner round one. We don't want to invest there. But I think they were probably just thinking what their whole offseason strategy has been all along was get more picks, build for the future, and that's why they traded back initially.
Yeah, very good point. And clearly corner was a need. I'm not dismissing that at all, especially if you had intentions at that point of trading Darby. Gilmore had just left, and it's worked out really well for them.
And also, didn't they fire the GM? Didn't they fire Whaley right after the draft? Was that them, or was it
yes.
right before? It was right after, right?
He's actually from the town I'm sitting in right now, and he, from what I understand, wasn't hardly involved in the draft, and...
To fire him the day after, I would hope he wasn't.
right. But that's how scouts contracts go. Like, when I was with the Browns, I got hired the day after they drafted Winslow and let go the day after we drafted Braylon. You know, that's just when scouts move.
Yeah.
But, Mike, this is awesome. As every Wednesday has been, I've really enjoyed our conversations. Look forward to next Wednesday already. Anything else in the works that people need to check out?
Let me think. I got some articles coming out later this week. I got one about just the Giants. Where do they go from here? That's coming out in the Washington Post tomorrow. But yeah, just follow me on Twitter at @PFF_Mike.
And you guys have a podcast tomorrow too, right?
Yeah, we do the preview pod every Thursday.
Excellent. All right. Thanks again.
Thanks, Matt.